Ladies and gentlemen, there was a bishop that had a bell ringer, and that poor guy passed away suddenly, and the bishop was very concerned. He said, you know, his bell ringer, the best bell ringer he ever had since he had been a priest and became a bishop, and he was really forlorn about it. And so he did what he had to do. He advertised for a new bell ringer, and sure, by and by, he had a long list of potential bell ringers. And one afternoon, he started interviewing bell ringers, and none of them, not one, held up to his high standard. Finally, he was getting ready to quit and thought, well, I'll just have at it another day, when a gentleman walked up with no arms. And he looked at the gentleman and said, what can I do for you? And the gentleman said, well, I'm here to apply for a bell ringer. And he said, but sir, you have no arms. He said, but Bishop Watch, he said, I'm an excellent bell ringer. And the gentleman started running into bells with his face, bang, one bell after the other, and music. It was just music to the bishop's ears. He never heard such beautiful music in his life. And he went to tap the gentleman on the shoulder to tell him he had a job, and the guy missed the bell, went over the balcony and down on the street and killed himself. And the bishop ran as fast as he could down the steps and out on the street. By the time he got out there was a crowd of people surrounding this poor dead individual. And they made room for the bishop, and they said, Bishop, what's the man's name? He said, well, I don't know his name, but his face sure rings a bell. With that, we call the meeting to order, and our first item of business is public comment. I want to keep in mind that this workshop is on the community design and mobility. You can certainly talk about anything within a comp plan that you'd like. I know there's a huge amount of interest in mobility, and so I expect quite a few comments. I would ask that you try to keep your comments as brief as possible. If you have something in writing and want to submit it to the commission and then summarize what you have in writing, that would be appreciated to keep managing our time well. With that, I see a gentleman here on the left, Mr. Horsey. Please come forward.
Good morning. Bobby Horsey with the Horsey Company's Horsey Family. First of all, I noticed this little informal request. Since I'm not the best public speaker, I would like to ask if I could ask Frank Key and Robert Tunnell come up here and do a presentation on a plan that we've been working on for mobility. If you don't mind.
It's your time. Use it wisely.
Okay. Frank, Robert. And just as informal as possible, ask us any questions, but it's our vision of Sussex County, the future of Sussex County, and solving the transportation problem. One of the things we would like for to be entered in the comp plan is for consideration is a strategy of setting up a Sussex County Transportation Advisory Committee, sort of like we did with the Ordinance 90 and Ordinance 99. Stakeholders together to meet and look at transportation needs, not only on the immediate needs, but also the 5-year, 10-year, 15 plan, and for a presentation to Sussex County Council that would then go on to DLDOT for recommendations of our improvements needed. So I strongly urge you to consider putting that in the comp plan, a suggestion for a Sussex County Transportation Advisory Committee. With that said, I'm going to let Frank begin with our planning that we've been working on.
Well, I will if it'll come up. So this is a concept, and what it amounts to, the highlighted roads you see there, the sort of pink and red ones, are just north, south, east, west back roads that we all know. The highlighted yellow ones actually are just highlighted because they're evacuation routes. So the concept is, you know, we've kind of, our opinion, I guess, is that we don't have as much a growth problem as we have a transportation problem or a mobility problem. But we have a really fine network of roads throughout the county. So the idea is to take those roads, not necessarily improve them unless they need to be, but just sign them with wayfaring signs in such a way that you can find your way around and that people who would ordinarily crowd onto 404 and Route 9 and Route 24 have other ways to get around town, you know, the county, and understand it. So for a good example of that is like Route 5 and Route 1. So if you're coming down Route 1 and you're going to part south, not necessarily Rehoboth, you can get on Route 5 and go quite a long distance there, but you don't know it because all you see is Route 5. And if you use your GPS system and you go on to Route 5, it'll continue to loop you back to Route 1. You know, so there's no, I mean, there could be a mobile application for the county that gives you alternate routes to get places, you know, if you get creative about it. But just signage alone could disperse traffic through the county and get some of it off. A perfect example of this is Redden Road. You know, Redden Road is much faster, and I think a mile shorter to get over to 113 than when you go on Route 9. And certainly the traffic is less, and it's a pleasant drive. And that Route 30, Route 9, and so forth are the kind of roads we're talking about. And that's countywide. Now, you'll notice that the grid is a little finer on the east of 113 because, as we know, based on the market and the demographic study that was presented, you can expect about 80% of growth to come east of 113. So those roads are all roads that most of us know and most of us use to avoid traffic. And unfortunately, you know, the joke I used to hear when I moved here 20 years ago was, well, we don't want to tell the tourists how to get on those roads because that's how we get around, you know. But if we disperse traffic, we can move people around better. Now, if that were a mobility element, you could then go to DLDOT and say, for each intersection and each segment of road, or with your own, you know, transportation consultants, how much more traffic or how many more trips can each segment of road take before it needs to be improved to a different level, if ever? So it could be that you have a road that starts to see, like Redden Road might become a minor arterial, and maybe it needs to have wider lanes and wider shoulders, or maybe we want bike paths on them. In other words, there's quite a lot of other work to do aside from just demonstrating these and putting signs on them, but you could have a cogent plan for how to go about improving these things as ahead of growth, basically, not behind it, because I think right now most of our traffic improvements are doing catch-up work from the past. So intersections could be looked at, road segments could be looked at, and further, for purposes of the future, this plan could be, or land use could be tied to this plan. So, you know, it's our opinion anyway that we're going to have people moving in. You know what our demographer's opinion of what that quantity is. But you could tie, I guess I would say, we don't believe that you can prevent people from settling where they want to settle. So if they want to be near Rehoboth, they're going to find a way to be near Rehoboth. But you can nudge them around a little bit. So in terms of what you, I guess I've heard testimony of controlling growth, well, this is a growth control kind of a plan. What I mean by that is if you create circumstances where, for example, you would have higher density mixed use developments, much like those that I presented in the first meeting that were Florida communities, and you insisted that those can only occur if they have frontage on these roads, then in the future, as development occurs, if they're on these, traffic coming to them and from them will almost by definition disperse because those roads are the roads they can get around on, plus all the other network of roads that's out there. So future growth and future traffic associated with that would then be dispersed by virtue of a plan that then could be gone. You could take this to DLDOT and say, this is our transportation element, and we want to look at future improvements that are tied to this plan, as opposed to kind of random, you know, improvements that they come up with. So that's kind of it in a nutshell, really. We also have an exhibit here. Let's see if I can find it. We took this plan, which shows all of the land preservation, the town's annexation areas, the red areas are the developed areas, already developed areas, and so forth. And that's the same network of roads superimposed on that map so that you can see how it relates to both land preservation, places where the towns want to develop, and the white space, which is all of the land that's not developed or not preserved. And it's interesting because many of those corridors correspond with areas that could be developed or are near areas that are already developed. So the last, I guess, component of it is, when I say mixed use, I mean mixed housing and commercial. And when you put commercial out away from highly trafficked areas, it's likely not going to be successful for years. An example of that is the 10,000 square feet of commercial at Bear Trap. It has never been successful. However, it will be eventually when Bishop's Landing and all, you know, when all that development occurs, or when there's enough rooftops around of whatever density there is. I think it takes, I may have this wrong, but something like 10,000 homes to support one grocery store, and it has to be within a 10-mile radius or something like that. So it takes a lot to support it, but if you insist on communities like this that are attached to these roads having a commercial component, even if it's small, what it will do is, for lack of a better word, scatter commercial around the county so that it's not all packed on, you know, Route 1 or Route 24 or so forth, so that in the future, as things grow, there are places for it, and that will also help dampen traffic a bit. Not a huge amount, but a bit. The major concept here is that we sign these roads and give people opportunity to go around so that, you know, when you're here, you can disperse, and in the future, more importantly, you can disperse and get around better, and thus relieve some of the problem. In the meantime, it's a forward-thinking plan that allows DelDOT, hopefully, to get on board and help with the improvements. And that's sort of it in a nutshell.
Because our idea with the committee is to formalize a group that can sit down and really constructively go through the county and figure out kind of a three-stage process. First stage is immediate signage. How can we get people around? How can we get them to navigate through the county better? You know, over the 4th of July weekend, I mean, I traveled between Lewis and Millsboro and Long Neck, and taking the back roads, it really wasn't much longer of a trip. But one time I took Route 24, it was three times the amount of time that it took to get there. So if we can navigate people around a little better, that could be an immediate savings. The second stage would be kind of an intermediate look, where we look within the right-of-way and we kind of catalog all the private developers, what improvements they're going to pay for, when they're coming, and try and figure out how to coordinate that with DelDOT improvements. And then within the right-of-way, looking at simple things, turn lanes, bypass lanes, maybe there's intersections that need to be signalized or four-way stops, etc. So we can kind of have a pretty good impact there without getting into very expensive dualization of roads and things like that. And then that's the third long-term step is, you know, when does Route 24 or Route 9 or any of these roads become, you know, need to be, you know, right-of-way bought and dualized, etc. So, you know, I think we're going to look at kind of a three-step, immediate, intermediate, and then a long-term plan versus just saying, yeah, we need to go out and dualize all these roads and spend hundreds of millions of dollars. I think we can make a lot of impact with a smaller amount of money just through inside right-of-way improvements and coordinating better private development improvements with DelDOT. And I think it really takes an organization of a committee to look through these and objectively rank improvements and what really should be done on a countywide basis.
Okay, so you're looking at a countywide approach and a more pragmatic approach to selecting roads and improvements within the county on a holistic basis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
That makes sense. Questions?
No questions.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, who wants to come up next? There's got to be more than somebody. Mobility. Here we go.
Good morning. Chris Weeks, Rehoboth Beach. I'm here today. I wear a couple of hats. I have both professional interest in this process and personal interest as I live in the county, and also am a member of the Rehoboth Beach Dewey Beach Chamber of Commerce. And it's my understanding that you are in receipt of a letter from the chamber outlining some suggestions.
Yes, we are.
And I just wanted to, I don't need to read that to you. You guys are capable of doing that. But as representatives of Sussex County Tourism Industries, we just wanted to provide some suggestions. We thought we could use a little more, specifically the economic development element, references tourism a few times. We felt that it could use a little more detail, and thought as representatives of that industry in the eastern side of the county that we would like to offer some suggestions. We've done so. The coastal highway corridor, Lewis to, you know, through Dewey, is a significant economic engine for Sussex County. But as I've heard people say, Mr. Wheatley, I've heard him say on occasion that economic development is not just bringing new. It's also the care and feeding of existing, whether that's agriculture in the county or tourism. It needs some care and feeding. We can't just ignore it. We need to make sure that we're paying attention to it so that it doesn't flounder. We believe that there's a significant opportunity for the county to engage the business owners in the Coastal Highway Corridor and find out what their needs might be, what their interests are, what their industries are looking at. One example is, you know, tourism, hotels. There's significant opportunity for hotel development in the corridor in terms of interest from both local developers and also national chains interested in capturing some of those 7 million visitors that come to the county. But there are issues with regard to zoning restrictions that make it difficult for that development to occur. I don't know what those answers might be. I just want to start the conversation so that we can maybe come to an understanding where we can encourage more hospitality development in the corridor. We just want, speaking on behalf of the chamber, we just want to start the conversation. We're here to help. We have a lot of people, a lot of interest, and a lot of expertise in the hospitality area. And any of the commissioners, Janelle, anybody has questions, wants more feedback from these things, we're here to help and here to improve the county. Thank you.
Just a question on this. Sure. I read your letter. Mm-hmm. It's very well written, by the way. Thank you. Do you see the issue as a zoning issue, or is it an ordinance issue? And do you specifically know, have any thoughts about what those limitations are for hotels?
Well, for instance, this is just anecdotal, so I can go back and I'll get some specifics for you. But there are some, and because I'm a little vague here, I don't want to necessarily use names, but what I've heard is that the parking restrictions regarding hotel development in the area are, according to a major hotel chain, it's some of the most restrictive in the country. I think there's opportunities. There are large enough parcels in the Coastal Highway Corridor, either developed or not developed, but ripe for redevelopment, where you could, if done properly, you could increase a setback. And the trade-off would be an increase in height. Now, it would be set back from the road. It wouldn't be cavernous, like people often say, we don't want to be Ocean City. I don't want to be Ocean City either. But there are opportunities. I think too often it is our opinion that height is like the third rail, and no one wants to go above the height. And I think that's short-sighted. I think, especially in the C1 zone, which most of this is, it's a closed zone. So we could maybe look at opportunities, and you don't have to worry about, well, what's going to happen down the road. It's going to happen here because C1 is the only place it can happen. So things like that. So anyway, to answer your question, I think it's both a zoning. There could be zoning issues that could be looked at. There could also be ordinance issues. One opportunity that I mentioned in the letter is workforce housing is an issue. A lot of people like to pay it lip service, but it doesn't do anything. But if there's an opportunity where we can get some of the housekeepers, the people who wait tables, the bartenders, if we can get them closer, speaking to a transportation issue, which I know you're going to spend time on this afternoon or later this morning, if we can get the workforce closer to where all these jobs are, that keeps them off the roads. So I think my point is I don't know what the answer is, but I think it's worth a conversation to think about how do we do this differently. You're not expanding Route 1. You got as many lanes as you're going to get. You're not building a bridge over the bays. It's a geography problem, and I think I know a lot of people don't like height. They don't like density. I think one of the issues is if we take a look at density in that area, it's an opportunity where you can actually put people closer. They could walk to work. They could bike to work. You can get them connection. You get them a connection to the trail, to the Junction Breakwater Trail. They can work in Lewis, they can work in Rehoboth, and eventually they could work in Georgetown if they wanted to. So I think there's it's very exciting to me, and there's lots of opportunity here if we just kind of open our eyes, have thoughtful, professional conversations with people, stop getting so emotional about everything, and just let's figure out a way we can do better in the coastal corridor.
Thank you. Mr. Rieger.
Good morning, Paul Rieger, 18171 Deer Forest Road, Georgetown, Delaware. Just under public comment, I believe that this comes under it. It's continuation. If I may approach, can I give each one of the
sure.
members? Sure.
Well, why don't you give it to Ms. Cornwell, and she'll pass it around.
I'll take them all. Okay.
Last night when I came before the planning and zoning under public comment, bringing up the discussion for the appointments, I read off number one underneath that from the state code, during the month of June of each year in which a term of any members therefore appointed to the county government expires, the county government shall appoint members to the commission. Now, with not following that, like I had stated last night, with three members expired on June 30th, if they didn't follow the first part, I agree to disagree with Mr. Wheatley's comments last night that he had stated after I had spoke. I cannot see how we can go to the second paragraph if the first one ends. If you don't complete the first process, how can you go to the next? If I'm building a building and the planning and zoning comes out and says you can't build because you don't have a permit, I just can't keep on building. So how does everything just go through it? It comes in all the codes. And also to consider concerning an earlier discussion, Mr. Ross, with public comment on the agenda for this agenda, as per what Board of Adjustment did when they put the public comments, this I feel is 100% comp plan meeting and should be here due to what it pertains. But if you don't want public comment on other subjects, then different realm in the comp plan, you should list it under public comment. Board of Adjustment on their FOIA complaint when they did the public comment, that if they put public comment on their agenda in the future, they have to list, at least the recommendation from the Attorney General on their FOIA complaint was on the, basically including public comment on the agenda when they did not intend to allow it. The Board of Adjustment is encouraged to pursue FOIA training. It's just when you're putting public comment, it should be
Mr. Rieger, just to be clear, I mean, we've only asked people to try to focus to our topics of discussion. We're not restricting that. We've called you up. You're allowed to speak. I know you brought this up to the commission last night. Our attorney has reviewed your comments from last night and has said that, you know, you're just simply wrong. I'll read you the pertinent sentence in the law, which the attorney says why he states you are wrong. Each member shall serve until that member's successor is appointed and qualified. So even though the law asked, it actually stipulates that counties would be members would be appointed in June, it gives an outlet for them not to be appointed in that case, and that members will serve until they're replaced. So with that, you know, that's all I can tell you. I know we'll continue to consider your comments.
But does that apply to the vacancy appointments?
There's no vacancies at the moment because nobody's been removed and nobody's resigned. So there's no vacancies, and by the law, everybody continues to serve. So that's all I can tell you. I'm a farmer, so, you know, give me a little break here, but that's all I can tell you.
Just wanted to just trying to figure out how, for period, that's the way I was
okay.
told in different things.
Thank you. Welcome back anytime.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Who's next? Mobility. My goodness, the big gorilla in the room and it's quiet. Okay. If there's no other comments, oh, here comes a young lady. Okay, sorry, I didn't see you.
Good morning. Guess I got here just in time. I just wanted to...
Your name,
to,
please, first. I'm,
oh,
sorry.
I'm sorry.
The tape doesn't
yes.
recognize your face.
Gail Van Gilder, Historic Lewis, Scenic Byway, Gateway to the Bay Shore. I just wanted to address two things regarding buffers. One is in regards to scenic byways. And in Newcastle County, they have put I don't know whether it's a setback or a buffer, but for scenic byways, there is a 50-foot setback to allow for a buffer to buffer the view shed from the highway. So that's just a section, and I know that that is a problem, you know, obviously in historic areas, we're not looking for that. But in very open areas, and it might even apply more to the western byway that we have, where you have a lot more open areas and a lot more scenic open views. But I just wanted to put that on the record as a consideration, because I know that it has been already done here in Newcastle County. And it has worked in a couple of instances where there was a fairly dense development that wanted to be built on the scenic byway. And the buffer was the solution because it allowed for a setback, but also the density. And everybody went away happy, so it worked. And the other thing that I wanted to address, and I don't know if it's been discussed up until this point or if it's anywhere in the comp plan, are landscape buffers. And having spent a lot of time in the last few years in Florida, in Naples especially, I am always very favorably impressed with what that city council has done to accommodate both very dense development, because obviously you have a lot of an aging population and that wants to live in small units, and there's lots of it. But driving along the roadways, you don't see it. And because they have done such an amazing job with buffers, landscape buffers. And I don't necessarily even mean big setbacks, but landscape buffers. I mean buffers that are three deep, I would say, in different types of plant materials, you know, starting with maybe very tall trees and then something in front of it lower and then a little, and then lower, so that when you're driving up and down the highways, you don't see what's behind all of that. And as I just drove here from Lewis to Georgetown, I couldn't help but to think, you know, there are a few places along there where they have put in a landscape buffer, but very few. And if we had that in our comp plan and had an ordinance, you know, to follow up with it, what a difference it would make as this county developed. And also, again, in dealing with the density issue, certainly density impacts the transportation, but obviously we hope we're going to be all working on that, and it looks like, you know, that help, sounds like help is on the way eventually here. But we always argue over density, and a lot of that is what you see and from the road. So, and it's often, I think, a solution that we don't use, that we couldn't use a lot better. And so those are the two things that I wanted to bring up.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yes, sir.
Hi. My name is Chuck Schoner, and I'm here as a senior citizen of Sussex County. I'm 75, and I've been paying taxes here as a part-time and then a full-time resident for 26 years. I have more of a question for you rather than a solution. Hopefully it'll engage some dialogue somehow. My question is, I'm not wearing any official hat. I'm involved with a number of nonprofits that include people my age or a little younger. And one of the things I keep hearing over and over as one of their top priorities for their lifestyle, and you know there are quite a few of us around these days, is that they would like to age gracefully in their homes rather than be detailed to an institution. And as you know, those institutions are getting pretty expensive. The range I've seen is between $6,000 and $10,000 for a room in one of those places. So that causes problems for a lot of people fairly quickly as far as running out their assets. And if that happens, then they're on the government dole for Medicaid and that sort of thing. So my question is, and what happens after a while is that they can no longer drive and they're sitting at home and they're kind of victims of, you know, being cloistered there, and they have a lot of things that they have to do and get to places like doctors and so forth. So my question is, will that be addressed somehow in one of the ordinances, or is that situation something that can be discussed and worked on through this process?
Well, I mean, the state of Delaware has a paratransit system for handicapped or people that can't drive. So that's an existing system. And, and I think this process is about how do we, you know, build on that system, the DART system and the paratransit system for those purposes. There's also, I think, I can't remember the...
ITN Southern Delaware?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, I'm aware of those too.
Yeah. But so I don't think... I'm not trying to dodge, but I don't think we're anxious to build new systems, but I think we are anxious to build on the systems that we have.
Well, that was kind of the minor concept I had, that the suggestion earlier on an advisory committee for another issue might... Is that relevant?
It is relevant. I mean, and I think it's one and the same issue. If I understand the proposal about having an advisory committee and a countywide approach, that doesn't exclude anything. In fact, it's inclusive of everything, including bike paths and multimodal transportation and all of that. But that would give us, and I think this is a good idea. I actually wrote some notes, and we'll discuss them later, and my notes and theirs, and we did not talk prior to the meeting, so they're amazingly close. You know, and this process will be to explore those options and how do we organize and create an approach to actually implement them. That's one thing we haven't done very well, in my opinion.
Actually, one of the groups I belong to, which I'm not speaking for, so I don't want to mention the name, is talking about doing something from Dover down as far as taking a look at our situation here.
Dover down, meaning?
Meaning they're located in Dover, but... you know, have a statewide reach.
Yeah, well, you may want to talk to people in Kent County about that. We have enough troubles in Sussex to keep ourselves busy, but
well,
certainly we...
This is outside of that.
Or a bus or what?
This is completely nonpartisan and not any part of that.
You talking about rail or bus?
Oh.
You're talking about mass transit, right?
Well, yes. We're looking for a short-term approach to start out, similar to the gentleman that talked earlier. So I'd like to leave my card
sure,
and
absolutely. Yeah. Be happy to have it.
And contact you, you know, somewhat shortly.
Sure, and you can send us any information you want. There's a place on our website to post it, and also you can mail it directly to our staff that are available and the commission, and they'll forward it on to us. We get piles of paper every week.
All right, thank you.
That's a good idea, though, in terms of transportation. There used to be a transportation consortium at one time. Some of you might remember that in Sussex County. And basically, it consisted of every nonprofit, government, quasi-government agency that had buses. And they all worked together, and there was a clearinghouse for that. And I think that type of idea...
What happened to that?
I think it died because it didn't get funded. It did require some funding, and the funding went away. But I know that...
Was there a contractor running it or something?
I'm not sure how it was done. I know the Cheer Center was involved in it, and there were several others. And it was seems to be remembered pretty fondly by the people that used it and the people who participated in the consortium. So I think that would certainly be something that could find its way into the plan, or at least we should put that on our list of ideas to consider. But I appreciate you raising the issue because it made me think of it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bob, do you know the principals? Are they any of them people still around?
I don't know. I can find out more, though. I'll find out more.
Chasing that down.
Yeah.
Young lady.
Ken Bach is the one who's put that together.
You're welcome to come up, please.
Yeah. I didn't plan to do this.
Well, that's all right. You have something to contribute. We just want to make sure we get your name and your comments on it.
Yeah, my name is Barbara Vaughn, and I am from Lewis. Years ago, and I can't say the number of years, but Ken initiated a plan to bring all of the people or all of the organizations that had bus service together so that they had one distribution point. And Del Dot liked it. Everybody liked it. But I think it got caught up in bureaucracy. And I have been talking with him occasionally since then to see if he wouldn't put his shoulder to the task of reinvigorating it. And I think it should be part of your report when you're doing the transportation issues, because it did work. And it's a shame that it hasn't been continued.
Well, maybe we can help him push.
Good.
Those of you who don't know, Ken Bach is the director of the CHEER group.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I think Mr. Bach's shoulder is probably behind how to figure out how to do with 20% less grant aid right now, but I'm sure he'd be happy to consider.
Good morning.
Welcome first.
Good morning. My name is Suparna, and I am a resident of Milton. We have a transportation company that works primarily right now for logistic care. We have a contract with them. There is a lot of steps. DOT is involved when you get into that. There are a lot of steps that are taken to make sure that everything is, the drivers are well educated in the thing. However, any time we start to look to see if there's any other avenue, because we do have the vehicles on the road, you run into so many brick walls that you tend to take a step back and say, this is more work than it's worth, we don't know where to go. But if there was something that the county was involved, or there was something that was coming together. There are a lot of transportation providers, and I'm sure that some would be interested. I stand here as the president of one, and yes, we would be. We just need the help from the other side of the counter. And we could make something happen, like the gentleman was saying earlier. So I just wanted to share that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
My name is Dave Yeager, and I live in Shelbyville. Last name is spelled J-A-E-G-E-R. Just one final comment about the need for senior transportation. I used to be involved, in fact, I still am, to some extent, is Independent Transportation Network, which offers rides to seniors. There is a fee involved. The problem is getting volunteer drivers. I've been working as a volunteer driver for a couple of years now, but what I'm noticing is that there are more applicants for riders than there are for drivers. I guess that's not too surprising, because the the compensation offers for the drivers is simply one of allowing credits toward the time when you can no longer drive and that you become a rider of that same service. But it does exist. The problem is, where are all these good Samaritans who want to drive their neighbors or people in other people in the county? I want to switch subjects though, because my real concern is something. I've been attending these comp plan meetings for some time, and the one that really grabbed me, and I don't remember exactly which person was doing the talking here, was that developers are not required in new developments to build the roads to the specs required by DLDOT. And they are, as my recollection is, and Janelle would know this, in Kent and in Newcastle. And the result is, if you move into a new development, and in Sussex, and the road is not to DLDOT specs, then DLDOT's not going to maintain it. And guess who gets stuck with the maintenance? You as a homeowner or your association. And that just boggles my mind. And of course, to people moving down from out of state, they have no clue. They love their house, they love their community, and guess what? In 10 years or 15 years, my development is about 20 years old now. We're going to be stuck with roads that need thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars in maintenance, and our dues are going to go through the roof. Am I wrong as far as the rule about, or the lack of a rule about roads in new developments?
What you have in Sussex is you have a county road spec that the developers are allowed to build to, and those roads are they're public, but they're privately maintained, typically by the association. That is known up front. That is absolutely known up front. Now, how that information gets disseminated to the individual homeowners, I really can't.
Well,
speak to.
Come on now. You know what? Estate guy is going to say, "Oh, by the way, you're going to have to pay for this road when it goes to pop."
Well, it's really which real estate attorney doesn't want to lose his license for not telling you that. So, I mean, it's a little more complicated than that. And the point is that every association, and I'm just telling you the setup, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, because one thing about it, and I know what your point is, and certainly a valid one, and that is that if all the roads were built to the state spec, that the state would maintain all of them. Well, we would hope that they would. I'm not sure that they could, but I'm not sure they have the budget for it. But what happens is in the beginning, there really should be, the Homeowners Association needs to have a calculation done, needs to have a capital reserve study done to determine what the cost of doing those roads is going to be. And you need to be saving money from the beginning. And that's where a lot of associations get jammed up. And one of the things that the developers do sometimes is they have the HOA fees in the beginning are very low for the very reason you said, to attract folks, that those fees are low. So there really should be some mechanism to require the developers to accurately reflect the true cost of what that's going to be and pass that on, you know, in their sales literature and so on. Now, I don't know that we have the ability to do that, but that's how the situation happens. And I know that folks that come from other areas, other counties, and other states find this to be strange, but in Sussex County, it's very commonplace. In fact, most of the developments are building to county specs.
But is it not true that Kent and Newcastle have that requirement?
I don't know, sir. I don't
Janelle,
know.
You?
Janelle.
I do know that Kent County adopted the state standard. Yeah. I cannot speak for Newcastle County.
Okay. I can't recall who it was, but that is, you know, my favorite quote is a friend of mine who said, you know, people coming down, welcome to Sussex County, low taxes and no services. And that's seems to be the theme, that we're, you know, we love living in Lower Slower, but when it comes to repairs, and I've been involved in our HOA for quite a few years, and I recall that somewhere along the line, a few years ago, they, and maybe the county did it, imposed a requirement that if your dues are approach $500 per person or per household, or that there is this requirement for reserves.
That's a piece of legislation called the Delaware Uniform Common Interest Ownership Act, otherwise known as the Kiowa. Yeah. And it's a state law.
But our dues now are creeping up to $500, but the people who are running the show now don't want to hit that $500 mark because of that rule, which says, oh my God, now we've got to do the reserves because we're going to have to fix these roads or fix whatever else.
Well, let me ask you something. If you looked down the tracks and you saw a bright light speeding toward you at 100 miles an hour, wouldn't you do what was necessary to get out of the way?
I might.
There you go.
So I'm supposed to...
You're stuck with it. You have to figure it out, figure out how much it's going to cost you, and start saving some money. And yeah, your dues are probably going to go up.
But my point is, you're telling me that the agent who arranges this deal is supposed to inform you formally, under obligation, that you are required to, that these roads are not up to standards.
Well, if there's HOA fees and so on, they are supposed to be disclosed to you. I do know that. I can't speak specifically to the statute, when you're buying a home.
No, I understand that there are covenants that say dues are not voluntary.
Right.
But the other caveat to that is the roads are part of, will be ultimately part of that dues process.
That's correct. Yeah.
I don't think people normally absorb that. Okay. My point here is, it seems to me that the county needs to be more engaged in that process and do, I guess, as Kent has done, to say that we should be requiring the builder to build roads to state specs, so we don't have this "oh my God" moment in 10 years or however long. Thank you.
Either way, you're going to end up paying.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
I say either way, you'll end up paying.
Well, if they build the roads to specs, then yes, I understand what Bob is saying about, you know, DelDOT may or may not be able to do, but the responsibility is theirs whether they act on it or not, as opposed to, you know, finding your HOA dues going from $500 to $1,000.
I understand. Thank you, sir. Anyone else? Yes, sir.
Are you
been standing there long enough?
Pardon me?
You've been standing there long enough, waiting patiently. Wow, sciatica. I've been there.
Yeah. My name is Bill Zach. I live just off Route 24. I have been reading the Cape Gazette material in the last month or so about traffic, and since the announcement came, I decided to come over today. But I was heartened by the comments in planning and zoning that traffic was a number one kind of priority for the comp plan. I applaud that. Is it still the case that you're thinking along those lines, or has it dropped in importance?
I don't know that we've set any official priorities, but we all recognize that mobility is the big gorilla in the room, so
okay.
I think it's safe to assume.
Okay, so this to me was a big breakthrough in terms of acknowledgement, at least. I have opposed, along with a number of other citizens groups, lots of developments many times on the basis, in part, of increasing traffic woes in eastern Sussex. I think this year's sort of incrementally worse than it's ever been, but that's neither here nor there. But I've always been told at Planning and Zoning and County Council that the traffic issue was not something they could do anything about. That wasn't within their purview, and pretty much the decisions were made with a kind of nod to the fact that traffic's getting worse on these limited roads, but that other considerations, including regulatory restrictions, mean that we go by the rules that are in place and these things get approved. One of the questions I had is, how many building lots in eastern Sussex have been approved for building within the next 3 or 4 years? In other words, they're just waiting for construction. What is the total?
Janelle, do you have a number?
I don't have a number off the top of my head.
Thousands, correct?
It's quite possible.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're talking about a situation that even for residents is increasingly problematic, let alone the tourism industry and so on. So, as I say, I was very heartened that traffic is on the radar for the comp plan and for planning and zoning as an issue of some consequence. The other thing that I read in the Cape Gazette that just shocked the bejesus out of me, because I had never heard anything like it before, and I'd like to check the accuracy of that, which is, I don't know if it was an editorial or an article about 2 months ago, that indicated that ultimate responsibility for road and traffic issues in the state relative to the county resided in the county, not with DLDOT. Is this a true statement, a statement that ought to be qualified? I ask that because in the history of my personal resistance to any number of developments around me that I thought were not in keeping with the developments that we're all presently there, the argument was always, well, this is a problem that belongs to the state. DLDOT is the one that's responsible for that. We in planning and zoning and we at county council can't make determinations based on those kinds of considerations because that's not something within our purview. I think your comments just before are symptomatic of that kind of thing. I think, you know, to push the burden of road improvements on people who have bought into these developments rather than where it belongs or should belong, as Dave suggests, with the state, is in effect to dodge responsibility for it. But if in fact the county has ultimate authority over roads and traffic, then that train that's coming down the track at us doesn't belong to the citizens, it belongs to you. And what are you guys going to do about this train that's coming down the track? To me, for years and years and years, Planning and Zoning and County Council have just said, what train? All we do is determine whether developers are, you know, sort of building within the specs that are there regulatorily. So with regard to that, I want to ask about regulations. Where do they get made? First of all, my first question, who has ultimate responsibility for road and traffic decisions in the county?
DLDOT
does. So this story in the Cape Gazette was completely inaccurate.
DLDOT owns the roads, and they have total control over the roads.
And I understood that the DelDOT executive was to be here today. What happened
to that? Here.
DelDOT staff is here.
Hi, Josh. How are you?
Representative. Aha. And?
No, Mr. Sapp. I mean, you can address your...
What about the story?
Mr. Sapp. Mr. Sapp.
Come on up.
Josh, you're going to talk. I wanted to ask a question to run out of time. So you have that covered in the...
I'll be brief.
So I'm Josh Thomas with DelDOT. First, I just want to say I don't know the article you're referring to, so obviously I can't speak to that specific article. But what I can say is that Mr. Ross is right, is that essentially in Sussex County, it's either state-maintained road, it's a road maintained by a town or a municipality, or it's a private road, like such as a subdivision street. The county doesn't maintain or control any roads. So yes, DelDOT has the ultimate authority. So I think obviously you're splitting hairs, but essentially it would have to be, well, what do you mean by the definition of responsibility? If you're talking about the actual infrastructure, that's DelDOT. If you're talking about responsibility, there's lots of ways you could define it in terms of, you know, collaborative planning and things like that, obviously. But yeah, if you're just talking about cut and dry definition about the infrastructure, that would be DelDOT.
Okay.
So hopefully that clears it up, and I don't want to take up too much time.
But. Well, does that mean that, am I going to be doing something wrong here that you're worried about not getting talked?
No, he was referring to the fact that we have a whole transportation discussion starting at 11:30, and that just be cognizant of the public comment time.
All right.
And the fact that, we listen to everything that's being said, and actually I'm quite happy that a lot of what we talked about today is somewhat reflected in the strategies we're going to present today. So just, you know, stay tuned, and you can certainly provide comments later this afternoon as well.
Okay. Well, I'll drop that and check with the editorial staff about their article. But this does not negate or forbid the county from making regulations about road development, traffic situations. Is that correct?
That's absolutely true.
Okay. So that, where are such regulations and the changes in them determined?
Well, you know, we're taking a little different approach in this comp plan than we have in previous ones. The statement that the county has not tried to plan for road improvements is just factually incorrect, just so you know. I didn't bring it with me today, but I have the original comp plan 1970, and road and traffic were addressed to many of the roads that were, at least some of the roads that were identified for this next 10-year period were in that 1970 plan. They just didn't get built out. So there was some planning done and all that. But what I want to make a point is that up until this year, we really relied on DelDOT to write all the mobility pertinent sections of our comprehensive plans.
Yeah.
In fact, our last comprehensive plan in 2008, the mobility element was written entirely by DelDOT, every word. And we just accepted that language. This year, we're taking a little different approach. We're going to try to be a little more proactive. I would say stay tuned. We have a whole late morning and afternoon that we're going to start to dive into this.
Yeah.
And hopefully, we can try to find a way to do a better job.
Okay. I'll listen. The one thing I wanted to mention was that if you're taking a new tack in the comprehensive plan related to assuming a certain degree of self-determination and focus on this issue at the county level, then the comp plan, given my sense of what I've seen of them and heard of them in the past, is that they're nothing but rhetoric. If you don't have granular regulatory language in the comp plan or the promise of it delivered within, a 1 year period when you're doing a study to determine what these new regulations are going to be, and if that's not written into the comp plan, then most of the sort of local decisions about development get made on a completely piecemeal basis. And whether or not comprehensive plan language and rhetoric is actually part of the process of determining those decisions is completely, contingent. It might happen, might not happen. And in public hearings that I've been involved in, what always seems to be the final word is what's the stipulated regulatory language so we don't get sued by developers. But that means that the regulatory language is absolutely essential
And it has to be firm and granular if you're going to control development in any meaningful way. So let me just suggest to anybody who would listen that a comprehensive plan is only as good as that kind of granular regulation language or the promise of it that shows up in it. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Sapp, and that we agree. Yes, sir.
Morning. I apologize to the council. I didn't mean to interrupt, and I'll be very brief. A thought I have, new to Sussex County.
Your name, sir?
Robert Fisher. I'm sorry.
Thank
Robert
you.
Fisher, F-I-S-C-H-E-R. I'll leave a card of contact with the young lady. I've talked with my elected officials a lot about economic development, and I haven't seen in the process, which I'm sure I will, if economic development were to be successful beyond people's wildest dreams. I know that you probably have a modicum of economic development you know about today, but I know that a lot of people are saying, including myself, that more economic development would be very helpful to the economic situation in Delaware and Sussex County. Sussex County is pretty good, really, but there's a lot of places. And I have friends that I've been trying to encourage to bring their businesses to Sussex County. I'm 46 years up in D.C. and that area in engineering and billion-dollar satellite programs and things. So I have friends who have money. I don't, but they do. So I would just like to, and I'll write this up and send it in too, but I just wanted to point that out, that I haven't heard anything this morning about the impact of what large economic development that could perhaps bring new business in. I know it's there, and I do see it from time to time, but is it a focus area?
Absolutely. We've already had a session on economic development. We're going to have another one on a draft plan. So, you know, it's a continuing discussion.
Do you see it as, I mean, traffic is certainly the impact of it, too, so that would be a real, I mean.
You know, traffic is commerce, and commerce is economic development. It's all tied together.
Okay, good. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And we're at 11, but we're not going to stop anyone, unless you're going to be here, Jeff, in the afternoon session. We have another session, but we'll continue. But keep in mind, we've used our allocated time.
Quick, thank you. I appreciate it, Mr.
No
Chairman
problem.
And Commissioners. Jeff Stone from Milton. Just a point of clarity. I think one of the previous gentlemen was referring to a letter that I wrote in a presentation that I made here to the county. To the Planning and Zoning Commission concerning who's responsible for roads and traffic, et cetera. And I just wanted to clarify that it is clear under state law, and Mr. Robertson didn't hear, but it's clear under state law that all land use regulation and decisions rest with the county. That's absolutely clear. And the issue here is not whether DLDOT has responsibility for the roads that DLDOT owns. It's who allows the development that creates the traffic. And that is the county's responsibility. And the county has not, as of yet, developed or adopted regulations that control how the development happens and the traffic that can go on to the roads. What has happened in other counties and the two other counties in this state is that there are level of service regulations that are adopted by the counties that were more stringent than those required by DLDOT. There are traffic impact study requirements that are more stringent, and in fact, DLDOT adopted Newcastle County's, and that's what they apply here. It's the development regulations that are developed and adopted by the county council and the development that is approved that allows the traffic to happen. So in my opinion, and I think if Mr. Robertson were here, he would confirm that, is that under the law, the responsibility for how that happens rests only here. The county owns it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Anyone else? One last chance. We're a little bit after. If we have a quick statement, we'll take it. Okay, seeing none, we'll move on with our agenda. The